Welcome to Reality Check. I'm Jeannie Allen. Challenging debate on the state of education today. Thanks for listening. There's a cliche about introducing someone who needs no introduction, but that's the position I find myself in today. Governor Jeb Bush is one of the most familiar faces and enduring personalities on the American political scene. Son and brother of presidents, son of one of the most admired first ladies in history, he was Florida's Secretary of Commerce before becoming the state's first two-term Republican governor. Jeb's gubernatorial years were marked by innovation across the board, but especially in the area of educational opportunity. Florida's education reforms, which many of you know about out there, focused on choice and accountability and have been a model for the rest of the country, which is one reason why we're having our gala and summit in Miami later on this week, October 25th and 26th. Governor Bush is our honorary chair, is our keynote speaker there, and I'm so delighted to bring this amazing longtime advocate, colleague, and leader to Reality Check. Welcome, Governor.
Thank you, Jeannie. It is a joy to be with you. Look forward to seeing you in a couple of days, actually.
Yeah, and you are really on the forefront down there. I'm, first of all, grateful that you are joining us, and secondly, grateful for your leadership there. You know, Florida was, as you used to talk about when you were first running and talking about education, kind of behind the times, and you all changed that. What happened?
Well, we were, you know, if you look at all the statistics people look at, we were near the bottom, or at the bottom. We actually had the lowest high school graduation rate in the country. So the rest of the world could say, thank God for Florida, you know, if they were bumping at the bottom. And we just had low expectations for every kid. Charter school started, the law was changed in 96 I actually with T. Willard Fair created one of the first charter schools in the state of Florida. But beyond that, there was very little school choice. There was very little public school choice. Fewer magnet schools. There wasn't the Florida Online program had just was in its infancy, and there was certainly no private school choice. So when I ran, I said we were going to change the system, and we proposed real accountability that was totally transparent and empowering parents with more choices than what they had up to that point. So high expectations, parental choice, robust accountability, ending social promotion in third grade, funding the reforms, which is a lesson that I try to share with aspiring gubernatorial candidates. You need to put your, you know, if you have high priorities, make sure the money for those priorities goes first. The much vaunted funding formula basically protects the status quo. So the net result of all that is that we've had our graduation rate in the state, because of particularly of the work of the Florida legislature after I left, and now with Governor Scott doing the hard work to maintain reforms, we've seen continual progress, and we've literally gone from the bottom to near the top, certainly for low-income kids, for African-American kids, for Hispanic kids, for kids with learning disabilities. We're in the top five based on the nation's report card. So a lot of hard work, and thankfully, great teachers in this state have responded to the challenge, and we've seen rising student achievement.
You know, it's a remarkable story, and I think a lot of us who are in this quote-unquote movement, who wake up every day doing the work, assume that most other people know the story. But as I look around at the political narrative today, and in some of the most heated races for governor, and even other just general races. I heard from a person today who's running for school board who was like, can you send me some data on charter schools? People are saying they don't work. Why is there this kind of lack of appreciation, understanding about what really works?
Well, part of it's, I think, our fault not to be consistent and persistent about providing the information. But there's a lot of forces that aren't focused on the rising student achievement of students. They're focused on the economic interests of the adults. Mm-hmm. And charter schools or corporate tax scholarships or you name it. Anytime that you offer, empower parents to give them choices that they otherwise wouldn't have, that somehow is a threat to the collective bargaining process, to, you know, the pensions for people working inside the system or whatever. So I think most people inside the system are good intentioned, for sure. But it's not a surprise that they would also focus on their own economic interests. And that's the big challenge. So you get a lot of what now is referred to as fake news about the success of charter schools and other reforms that are in place. And frankly, Jeannie, the other thing I'd say is that whatever success has occurred in Florida or other places where families are empowered to make these choices, we got a long way to go.
We got a long way to go.
There's a long, long, long way to go to reach the objective of making sure that every child reaches their God-given abilities through a high-quality education.
Well, and you were talking about before how Florida is at the top of the pack when it comes to raising achievement and closing the gap, particularly for, you know, Latino and African American students. And that's happening in all sectors. And you emphasize this. A lot of us work hard to emphasize this. This is kind of sector agnostic. I mean, when you started challenging systems to get better, offered kids who were in failing schools a way out, gave one more money to systems, there was the skies falling. I'll never forget. I mean, this is destruction of education and schools. But those leaders and teachers that you just mentioned, the system, many of them did rise to the occasion.
Absolutely, they did. And the lesson is that you can't, you know, look, the unions continue to this day to fight any of these reforms. And it's not a surprise, and there should be some understanding of the fact that their job isn't, the teachers' union job isn't to create an environment where there's rising student achievement. Their job is to get the best economic terms for the members they represent, half of whom, by the way, aren't teachers.
Right.
They're working in the, you know, in the bureaucracy, or they're working, it could be bus driver, they could be, depending on the state, there's all sorts of other jobs that go through this. So it shouldn't be a surprise that they're opposed to this, and they were really opposed to our efforts. But look, there were, maybe not so much today, I hope this is not the case today, but back then there was there were rewards for doing big things politically. It doesn't look like that is the case as much today, where everybody's demonized for even having a bold thought, much less implementing a bold thought. So we've got to get back to advancing bigger ideas and having the persistence to turn them into reality. I'm proud, and that's where I'm really proud of Florida, because the Florida legislature particularly has been on the vanguard of reform. Almost every year they're doing groundbreaking work. Mm-hmm. And they're rewarded for it. I mean, the idea that somehow you're punished for passing laws that really are provocative but also beneficial for children, that myth is being shattered in Florida almost every legislative session. And Governor Scott has been a strong ally in actively signing these bills into law and then implementing faithfully the work that has to be done through the school districts.
Well, and you're absolutely right. When you stand up and actually say what matters and what, you know, really the principle is, that this is about getting kids educated no matter where they are, people do follow that. I mean, I'm watching right now, Governor Walker is under a big challenge by Tony Evers, the former public state superintendent of public instruction, who, by the way, every single time, every day he was in office as the quote-unquote superintendent of public education, did everything he could to destroy educational choices for kids. And now Governor Walker's having to justify the fact that some 250,000 students alone have benefited from his program. So there is an information gap out there. What do we do for that?
Well, I think one of the things that's necessary is that I think politically, I'm sure that Governor Walker's doing this. He's making the case that his opponent will take Wisconsin back to a place where there wasn't as much learning gains and parents didn't have choices. And it's really hard politically to, if the corporate tax scholarship program and the charter schools, if you add up all of the choices that exist in Florida, for example, and we have a campaign that where one of the candidates is talking about getting rid of the charter school community, and certainly challenging the corporate tax scholarship program as well. Those are hundreds of thousands of kids
right.
their parents would lose the choice that they have that they're satisfied with.
And it's all about money. They're all talking about, well, it's the system's money. No, it is the taxpayers paying for a child, right?
Absolutely. Plus, the fact is that if you take these programs, by and large, if you thrust several hundred thousand kids back into the public school system, there's no place to put them. The cost of that would be extraordinary. And so this is all a false narrative that's being built up. And it's been that way forever. And generally, the what we need to do more, I think, is educate people about, charter schools are independent public schools. They have to take all comers. Their success in terms of learning gains has been verified all sorts of different ways. I mean, this is ultimately what parents have always wanted, which is some say in where their child goes to school. Mm-hmm. And the places that do it end up benefiting in terms of parental satisfaction as well as higher achievement.
And economics. I mean, I'm thinking about Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, who, of course, will be with us as well later this week, Governor Bush. And, he joined hands. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He joined hands with Polly Williams, a self-acclaimed yep. Black Panther, African-American Democrat, Howard Fuller, of course, great civil rights advocate, and Polly and Howard and T. Willard Fair at the Urban League, who you partnered with, and hundreds of thousands of people who have lived in urban areas are the ones who have fought for the right to do what every wealthy American does every day, which is pick where they live or pick a school.
Absolutely. And those coalitions need to be constantly built. I mean, I think part of the success of the school choice movement is when you take ideology out and you turn it into a moral issue, which it is. And mm-hmm. The success of that is pretty powerful. To the extent that if you now have in the states that have really advanced, such as Wisconsin, Louisiana, and others, you now have a constituency for school choice, and it's pretty hard to take that away from people that have really, really wanted it and are satisfied where their child goes to school.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, here in Washington, D.C., you know, we've seen parents really rally where we've almost got 50% of students in a school of choice. We've seen parents rally to defend this year after year. Of course, this is headquarters for our federal government and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who, of course, you've known for a long time. She attended the National Review Institute event last week. I got a chance to see her, and people gave her a standing O for having to withstand the criticism of simply talking about getting back to the rights of parents and dignity that goes with it. And I also just wonder whether or not, you said earlier we have to do a better job. I still don't see education as the biggest issue for any of us freedom-loving people.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But in fact, if you look at the world we're moving towards in terms of where the jobs are going to be created, what the skills that are required for people to live purposeful lives, a reinvigorated education sector is essential. And there's many ways to achieve that, but the most proven way is to have a variety of different choices for parents to choose from. And make sure you measure the success based on student achievement in some fashion, and you'll see that there'll be phenomenally successful schools that are created for the 21st century. And that's, I'm so proud of Betsy's efforts at the federal level. She's courageous, she's tough, and she is passionate about empowering parents to make these choices to get to a better outcome. And while that's not necessarily a D.C. issue, having an advocate in Washington is hugely important.
Oh, yeah, no question. You know, we talked recently about the importance also of us all who are interested in advocating for educational excellence to be mindful of higher ed and post-secondary education, if you will, not necessarily the same mold that we have, because we have so many adults who were not well served by K-12, and there are so many different ways to educate students. You talk a little bit about your interest in competency and personalized education, how that fits into kind of adults being productive and maybe even learning differently.
Yeah, ultimately we need to identify the skills required to live a purposeful life going forward, and that's we're in a radically different time already, but it's transitioning to something completely different, yet to be defined in its entirety. And I think one of the catalysts for making sure the next generation is prepared is is once you master the material, you get to move on, and you could envision a system where you're developing these skills and reaching your God-given ability and not being held back. The tragedy of American education is there are a whole lot of students that could be getting college credit by the time they graduate from high school. A month ago, Jeannie, I went to a school called A.D. Henderson, which is associated with Florida Atlantic University. It's a version of a charter school. It's independent of the school district in Palm Beach County. But their students graduate with a four-year degree from high school.
Wow.
I mean, it's the most amazing thing in the world. If you start with the premise that children are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and you organize the school around that notion, you can accelerate the learning to the point where I met a kid that was doing research, actually cited research as a senior in high school, and would graduate. He was taking all college courses, and he'll graduate from high school with a four-year degree and start his master's program. Now, that's not for every kid, but there's a lot that we hold children back. We talk about the struggling students a lot, but think of all the kids that could master this material and save their parents a ton of money by graduating with college credits or with a nationally recognized certificate that said that they are actually capable of getting a job. That's the 21st century education system, and the monolithic, one-size-fits-all education system that may have worked in 1950 seems to me is completely irrelevant in 2018 and beyond.
I just am so excited to hear you talk about that, because you're right. There's zero reason for us to have these confines anymore, these sort of limitations that you have a K and you have an 8 and you have a 12 and then you start again and you go and have a freshman year to a senior year in college if you're lucky, which is still a minority of people out there. Or you have a community college. These ideas of fixed grade levels and levels of education simply don't apply in a world where education, as our good friend Giselle Huff liked to say, is ubiquitous. Knowledge is ubiquitous. It's how you get your education. It's what you're striving for. It's your competency. And so, you know, one of the things I know we're going to be talking about later this week, Governor Bush, and one of the things you're leading the charge, and just your example, is thinking differently and driving this conversation so that everyone can, in fact, be trained and skilled. But where do you start when we have the system that's already baked, if you will? I mean, can we draw lessons from what you did when you were governor some time ago?
Well, there's a lot of things that we can do with the existing system as it transitions towards a more open system that's, where all the silos are eliminated, for sure. I'll give you one example. In our accountability system in Florida, this was done after I was governor, but the basic accountability system is it rewards the things you want more of. So we created, we allow for, you get bonus points in the accountability system for passing AP courses. Teachers get bonuses up to $3,000 for students that pass AP courses. We saw, and then we funded the AP classes to expand them, and we saw an explosion of AP classes because it was embedded in the accountability system. Shortly thereafter, my time as governor, a legislator came up with the idea of including nationally recognized certificates in that accountability system as well. And Florida went from 3% of high school students taking a course or a certification course or something that was embedded in a regular course to give them a nationally recognized certificate, 3% to 38%.
That's amazing.
Because it was part of the accountability system and there were rewards for it. Basically, everybody's interests were aligned in the right way. I think if states started developing accountability systems that rewarded these kinds of things, then you get more of it. Modern states is a great example of that, where thanks to Steve Klinsky, you know, who's funded this personally, but imagine if a state decided that they would pay for the CLEP test for every high school student that was going to college so that they could get their freshman year for free. These are simple ideas that have a powerful result. And the resistance to it is both in the higher education system and the K-12 system, well, you don't understand, or somehow that this is a threat to accelerate the learning process, and even more importantly, make sure kids learn so that they're not fifth grade level readers by the time they're in 11th or 12th grade. That system of, you know, aspiring to a much better result for students somehow is a threat to these entrenched bureaucracies, both at the higher education level and K-12. And the fight never ends, doesn't it?
No.
Jeannie, it just never ends.
And it's just so fascinating because the same people who want to protect that status quo have children or grandchildren who are doing extraordinary things with little pieces of technology in front of them. You know, it reminds me of the gentleman I saw at one of Excel and Ed, your foundation's conferences a few years ago, about the hole in the wall, the guy who put the computer in India and watched young children playing.
Yeah.
And coding things, extraordinary, in a whole other part of the world. Kids who were not trained, that were barefoot showing up. You mentioned modern states. There was actually a great piece in the Washington Post this weekend on the 20th about that. And I do think these changes are happening. The U.S. Department of Education is opening up the discussion for accreditation. Your former colleague, Frank Brogan, is at the Department of Education now, of course. I expect you would expect great things from him, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The guy's, apart from having one of the most amazing attitudes about life and good humor, he also is, he's been a teacher, a principal, a commissioner of education, lieutenant governor, the head of a university, the head of the university system in Florida and in Pennsylvania. The guy has more knowledge about how these systems work, and he is a joyful warrior, if you will, to tear down the walls that make it harder for the success we need as a nation.
Well, you as well, and again, hats off to you for your continued leadership on this all-important issue, Jeb. This is the most important issue of our time. It does drive, as Condoleezza Rice has said, so many others, it drives national security, it drives the economy, and we get frustrated, and a lot of us get beaten down, but this is a great reminder that there's a reason to keep getting back up, because we're still, not barely past 50% proficiency anywhere?
Yep, that's right. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and Jeannie, I appreciate the fact that you have extraordinarily good judgment to have your 25th anniversary event in Miami, Florida. That shows amazing judgment.
Took me 25 years, but we're finally making it to where we realize where the real action's happening, not in D.C. Governor Bush, thank you so much for being with me today on Reality Check. I will see you in a few days. And for any of you who want to follow the governor, get more information about his foundation, Foundation for Excellence in Education, Excel in Ed, go on to edreform.com. Follow me at Jeannie Allen. And be sure to follow Governor Bush as well at Jeb Bush. Thank you again.
Take care.
Listen and subscribe to Reality Check on edreform.com, National Review Online, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere podcasts are heard. Find out more at edreform.com/realitycheck.